So when I think of shelter, that's what I think of. We're offering that to these people who have no homes. But if you think about it, there are many of us who can use some kind of shelter. What's the phrase? Maybe almost sounds like a cliche, but it's true that everyone you meet is fighting some kind of a battle, facing some kind of a struggle. And most of the time, we don't even know it. Often those struggles are very public. A breakup in a relationship, being in between work, fighting a disease in a time of grief. But oftentimes those struggles, those battles are internal and unseen by anyone. So it is a good thing to remember that everyone we meet is in need of some kind of shelter because they're facing some kind of a struggle. Nurture. Well, here, you know, we have in our bulletin that children are welcomed and cherished at Wildwood Presbyterian Church. That's been in our bulletin for 20-some years. I like that phrase. Children are welcomed and cherished. And we do a pretty good job of welcoming and cherishing. Could we do better? Probably, but we do a pretty good job of welcoming our children, cherishing them, and helping them to grow in the faith. Do you think about nurture? We think about children when we think about nurture. But I remember when our kids were at Woodland School, their goal there for the kids was lifelong learners, creating lifelong learners. Well, I think that's fine for children. But it's really not a bad goal for adults either, to be a lifelong learner. Too many of us, I think, we get confirmed, we figure out what we know about God at an early age, and then we think we're done. But confirmation, whatever you do in your teen years, that's just the beginning. I think back to what I believed and how I experienced God and what I thought about God when I was confirmed in ninth grade. And I think about where I am now because it's entirely different. It's been shaped by my experiences over these last many years, by the experiences I've seen you have. Lifelong learning, lifelong nurture in the faith. And it can't be just Sunday mornings anymore. Not in this world where sure, there's plenty going on at church, but there's plenty going on out there in the world, in your lives, in your kids' lives. It can't just be Sunday morning. Nurture has to be more than just Sunday. And in this high-tech age, when we have all kinds of rapidly changing technology, how do we as a church use that in the service of nurturing faith in our kids and also in ourselves? We're just beginning to scratch the surface of how to do that best. And spiritual fellowship, a fellowship of spirits. Think about that. That means we don't just gather for a good time, but we gather as fellow spirits who are on a journey, who are on a pilgrimage, who are on a quest. Some of us may doubt and wonder, but we have that sense we're going somewhere. We're headed somewhere. We came from somewhere. We're going somewhere. Walker Percy, the novelist who died maybe 20 years ago, he said the most important distinction between people, the most important distinction, he said, is between those who see life as a quest and those who do not. Those who see their lives as going somewhere, doubting, wondering maybe, but as going somewhere, and those who just see life as a random collection of experiences bouncing from one thing to the next with no direction, no purpose. So to see ourselves as part of a spiritual fellowship means that we see ourselves as spirits in fellowship on a journey. Well, we could sort of go through our little brochure and all the things that we do here at Wildwood Presbyterian Church and think about how we do shelter and nurture and spiritual fellowship, but I'd like us to think about why these things are important. Why these things are important. And to do that, I want to read to you part of the story of Jacob. Jacob, you know, is one of God's rascals. He's not the most moral person in the world. You know, the family values that we find in Genesis would raise a lot of eyebrows, and do. Jacob, you may recall, is the second of twins. His brother Esau born to Isaac and Rebekah first, and then Jacob, which means that Esau, the older brother, received the birthright, which means all the stuff from his father, would receive the blessing, because everything went to the oldest child, except that Jacob, in ways we won't discuss today, but make very interesting reading and could be soap opera quite material. Jacob steals the birthright, steals the blessing, deceives his father and his brother in the process. And so in a sense, he's won, but he's won all the stuff, he's won all the inheritance from his father, but what he's lost, of course, is his brother's affection. And so his brother, quite properly enraged, is out to do Jacob harm, and Jacob flees for his life through the desert. Lots of adventures ensue in many, many years, but Jacob ends up doing very well in the business world. He has two wives. He's got 12 kids. He's ready now to come home. But he knows Esau, his brother, will be waiting for him. Esau, who's had so many years to just chew on all that his brother has done, to just live in the midst of that rage, to let it just ferment. And so Jacob's worried, so he sends a bunch of gifts on ahead. And then we read these words in the 33rd chapter. Now Jacob looked up and saw Esau coming, and 400 men with him. So Jacob divided the children among Leah and Rachel, his wives, and the two maids. He put the maids with their children in front, then Leah with her children, and Rachel and Joseph last of all. He himself went on ahead of them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times until he came near his brother. But Esau ran to him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. When Esau looked up and saw the women and children, he said, "Who are these with you?" And Jacob said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Then the maids drew near, they and their children, and bowed down. Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And finally Joseph and Rachel drew near, and they bowed down. And Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company that I've met?" Jacob answered, "To find favor with my Lord." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." Jacob said, "No, please, if I find favor with you, then accept my present from my hand, for truly to see your face is like seeing the face of God, since you have received me with such favor." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Truly, to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Just imagine Jacob in that moment, so sure he'd be receiving the condemnation of his brother, if not violence from his brother. And yet he's met not with that, but with grace and welcome and love. Truly, to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Nowhere in the Bible does anyone see God's face. Now, it does say in the Bible that Moses met with God face to face. But it also says, when it tells the Moses stories, that just once Moses is allowed to see God's backside, it says, because no one could really bear to see the face of God. You know, the benediction that we often use, "The Lord bless you and keep you, the Lord make his face shine upon you." Can have the shine upon you, the light of his countenance. Well, that can shine on you. But no, the face of God would be too much for us to bear. We read in the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 13, you know, the verses we usually hear at weddings. At the end of that chapter, you know, it says, Paul says, "Well, now we see through a glass darkly, but then when we're with God in the next life, then we will see face to face." Only then might we be ready to really see God face to face. But now, no, we don't see God. That doesn't happen. And it may just be that this is as close as we come when we look in the face of another human being, someone who has welcomed us, someone who has been the grace of God for us, that's when truly seeing that face is like seeing the face of God. That's what's behind all this. Why is it important? The shelter, the nurture, the spiritual fellowship of the children of God. Why is that important? Well, it's because within each of us is that image of God. And when that image of God shines through us, then you really are seeing. You're seeing the face of God. That's why that shelter and nurture and fellowship are important. You know, philosophers have tried to tell us over the years, what is it that makes us human? What is it that makes us who we are? You know, Descartes, one of those philosophers, you know, he said, you know, in a memorable phrase, I think, therefore I am. I think, therefore I am. Which reminds me of the great story of Descartes walking into a bar. And the bartender says to Descartes, would you like a beer? And Descartes says, well, I think not. And he disappears. I'm not sure they got it at the first service, so thank you. It was not an 8 o'clock joke. It's a 10:30 joke. Anyway, I think, therefore, I am. But really, is that what makes us human? Is that what's important? I think, is that what makes... I mean, we know there's more to life than just what we think, right? We know there's something more there. We know there's something inside us that's more than just thinking. I mean, thinking is important. You know, we Presbyterians, we love God with our minds. But there's more to us than that. There's more to us than that. Teilhard de Chardin, who is a French paleontologist who is also a theologian and had some really fascinating things to say about evolution and faith and scientific kind of things, but he said this, very simply, he said, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Two very different things. We're not human beings having a spiritual experience. No, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. And if you look at yourself, if you look in the mirror and see that, I'm a spiritual being. If you look at each other and say, each and every person, even the people that drive me crazy, even the people I disagree with, even the people who are quite clearly wrong because of the way they think, they too are spiritual people. They have a soul. They have a soul. I have a soul. So why don't we take better care of it? Teresa of Avila, one of the saints, one of the, you know, ancient folks who write things, and it's amazing, isn't it, how ancient people really, they thought of the same things we do. They had the same doubts, the same worries, the same struggles, and many of the things they wrote and said are very, very much speak to us today. So writing centuries ago, she said this, it's no small misfortune and disgrace that through our own fault, we neither understand our nature nor our origin. Would it not be gross ignorance if when a man was questioned about his name or his country or his parents, he could not answer? Stupid as this would be, it's unspeakably more foolish to care to learn nothing of our nature except that we possess bodies and only to realize vaguely that we have souls because people say so. Rarely do we reflect upon what gifts our souls may possess, about who dwells within our souls, or how genuinely precious our souls are to us. Therefore, we do little to preserve their beauty. All our care is concentrated on our bodies, which are but the coarse setting of the diamond. We all know there's more to us than what we see, touch, think. We all know that we have souls. We are spiritual people, and yet why is it that we do so little to take care of our souls? Why is it that we do so little to take care of our souls? It's sort of like saving for retirement. I remember first job, first paycheck, knowing up here, okay, I need to start setting some money aside for retirement. Well, it was many, many, many years before that actually happened. I knew it was good for me. Did I do it? No. Well, how often do we not do what's good for our souls? Too often. Too often. Diana Butler Bass, who's a sociologist of religion, who studies religion, she was writing in her book, Christianity After Religion. She's saying people today, there's still a sense of sin, I think, especially when we find ourselves caught up in sin. Sin's a very real thing, and we all at some point or another, I think, find out just how much we can mess up our lives. And in that moment, sin is a powerful reality for us. But she said today she thinks people connect more with a sense of being lost. Lost not in the sense of salvation, not that the lost are those who are going to the other place while we go to heaven, not that kind of lost, but just lost, like not knowing where you are, not knowing your place in the universe, not knowing where you belong. And that lostness is a condition of the soul, she says. We vaguely know that we begin with God, and our life is a journey that returns again to God. But in between, I think many people do feel lost. Walker Percy, the novelist I mentioned earlier, he wrote a book he called The Last Self-Help Book, but the title says enough. It says, Lost in the Cosmos, that we really don't know where we belong anymore. We have a sense of the greatness and vastness of the universe, you know. Science has taught us that. And in the midst of that, though, however, we say, well, so where now do I belong? Where do I fit in? So listening to one's soul is one of the ways we find our place. We find where we belong. There's a great tradition of the church called the care of souls. And that's what the shelter, nurture, and spiritual fellowship of the church are about. The care of souls. Shelter. That the church be a place where wounded souls can come to be sheltered from the dangers without and find a place to heal again. Nurture, that the church be a place where not just children, but all of us children of God can grow our souls, can have our souls be fed, and also in so doing feed one another, just as when we shelter one another. And spiritual fellowship, to come together to know that as we gather, whether we're in a Bible study talking about the deep things of faith or whether we're sitting at the international dinner trying some food from a place we may not even have heard of, that we're all there together breaking bread there, breaking bread here on a journey that begins in God, and somehow we will find our way back to God, and paying attention to that journey really matters. Because we are spiritual beings having a human experience. Well, how do we do that in this time of such rapid cultural change with all these huge technological shifts going on around us? That's one of the challenges for our church, for any church. How do we do it? I think we start by looking in the mirror and seeing a soul. And looking around this room and looking around our dinner tables and looking around our places of work and park benches and libraries and school hallways and seeing other spiritual beings who, like us, are having a human experience. And when you really see people that way, when you really see yourself that way, that's what motivates you to shelter and to nurture and to share a spiritual journey. Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. It's a good try. It was good. But William Sloan Coffin, former Yale chaplain, preacher, he said, nah, Descartes had it wrong. He says, it's I love, therefore I am. I love, therefore I am. And that's what souls do. Pray with me. Gracious God, the next time I look in a mirror, give me a glimpse of the soul within. And the next time I look in someone's face, give me the grace to see your face there as well. For Christ's sake, for the world's sake, and for our own sakes. Amen. And let's worship God now with our gifts and with song. Pray with me. Gracious God, use all that we are and all that we have, including what we put in these plates, but even more, in the service of your love. Amen. Help us accept each other as Christ accepted us. Teach us, sister, brother, each person to embrace. Be present, Lord, among us, and bring us to believe. We are ourselves accepted and meant to love and live. Let your acceptance change us so that we may be moved in living situations to do the truth in love, to practice your acceptance until we know by heart the table of forgiveness and laughter's healing art. Lord, for today's encounters with all who are in need, who hunger for acceptance, for righteousness and bread, we need new eyes for seeing, new hands for holding on. Renew us with your Spirit, Lord, free us, make us one. One prayer to add for today for Mark Forsher, who's in great pain in the emergency room with an infection. So let us remember that life is short, and we have but little time to gladden the hearts of those who travel with us. So let us be swift to love and make haste to be kind.
Regardless of your busy schedule this week, take the time to nurture your soul and see the face of God in someone else. Be a blessing and be blessed. May the peace of Jesus Christ, the peace which surpasses all human